William the Salvage Collector. "Come on, William," called Mrs. Brown. "The siren!" William tumbled sleepily out of bed, hunched into his dressing gown, put on his bedroom slippers, and made his way to the air raid shelter at the bottom of the garden. Already assembled were William's sister Ethel, wearing a siren suit of pale grey corduroy, and Mr. Brown, looking sleepy and dishevelled, but preparing to reread his evening paper with an air of philosophical detachment. Robert, William's 19-year-old brother, was on night duty at the warden's post. Ethel groaned as William entered. "Oh, gosh," she said. "I hoped he'd have slept through it." "Of course not," said Mrs. Brown placidly. "I shouldn't dream of letting him sleep through it. Now make room for him, dear, and don't be disagreeable." "Can't I have the hammock?" pleaded William. "No, dear," said Mrs. Brown. "You only fidget and fall on people." "Well, what can I do, then?" demanded William. "Go to sleep. It's long past your bedtime." "Sleep?" echoed William in disgust. "I jolly well wouldn't waste an air raid sleeping in it." He stopped and listened for a few moments. "That's a Dornier," he pronounced, with an air of finality.
"On the contrary, it's a cow," said Mr. Brown, without looking up from his paper.
"Oh, yes, so it is," agreed William. "Can I have some chocolate?"
"Not yet," said his mother.
"Oh, I think you might let me have a bit of chocolate. I might be blown up any minute, and you'd be jolly sorry afterwards that you'd not let me have a bit of chocolate."
"Wait a minute." He paused. "I can hear bombs."
But it was only the Bevertons arriving. Mr. Brown groaned. The Bevertons had asked if they could share the Brown shelter, and Mrs. Brown hadn't liked to say no. Mrs. Beverton was inordinately stout, and her daughter Bella, the same age as Ethel, was inordinately thin. They were both dressed in the latest in siren suits, and had obviously taken great pains with their makeup and coiffures. Mrs. Beverton, moreover, used a new exotic perfume that made William cry out in genuine alarm, "Gas! Where's my mask?"
"So sorry we're late," she said gaily as she entered. "We just had to finish off our new siren suits. Room for a little one?"
She plunged down onto a small camp mattress next to Mr. Brown, almost blocking him from view.
"Not squashing you, I hope?" she inquired politely.
"Not at all," came the muffled voice of Mr. Brown from between her and the wall of the shelter.
Bella sat down by Ethel and took out her knitting.
"I'm making a green jumper, like that one of yours," she said.
Ethel held up the jumper she was working on.
"Do you like this colour?"
"Marvellous," said Bella.
"I want to get it finished by tomorrow. I like the yoke effect, don't you?"
"Marvellous," said Bella on a higher key.
"Did you see the cardigan Dolly Clavis knitted with a hood? She's going to lend me the pattern. It'll be useful for cold mornings."
"Marvellous!"
squeaked Bella ecstatically.
"You'll have a cup of tea, won't you, dear?"
said Mrs. Brown to her husband. But Mr. Brown wasn't there. At Bella's third "marvellous," he'd crept quietly out of the emergency exit.
"Oh, isn't he tiresome?" sighed Mrs. Brown.
Mrs. Beverton embarked upon a sea of prattle.
"This scrap iron business is simply disgraceful. It's the same everywhere. They made a terrific effort just at the beginning and then let things slide. There must be lots more scrap iron about by now that no one's troubled to collect."
William reluctantly surrendered to the tide of sleep that was engulfing him. He slept through the all clear, but was roused by Mrs. Brown. Mrs. Beverton was still in full sail.
"This cousin of mine made quite a little sum for the Spitfire Fund by this exhibition. Just bits of shrapnel and a piece of Dornier and part of a German incendiary bomb and a few things like that. People paid a shilling admission, and she's promised to lend it to me, and..."
Mrs. Brown smothered a yawn.
"That was the all clear," she said. "Shall we go back to bed?"
"Oh, what a shame," said Mrs. Beverton. "I always hate leaving a party."
Ethel sat up and rubbed her eyes.
"Oh, we had quite a nice little nap," she said to Bella.
"Didn't we?"
"Marvellous,"
yawned Bella. As William, back in his own bed, yielded once more to sleep, his thoughts went over what Mrs. Beverton had been saying. No one was collecting scrap iron. He awoke with the firm conviction that he must do something about it. Most of his previous war efforts had been unsuccessful, but he couldn't go wrong collecting scrap iron. You just collected scrap iron and then took it to the depot in Hadley so they could make it into Spitfires. He assembled his outlaws that morning.
"We'll write notices,"
he said, and put them into people's letterboxes, and then, when they've had time, we'll go round and collect it. The composition of his appeal took some time. Scrapion, please collect your scrapion, and we will call for it tomorrow. By order, William Brown. They spent several hours copying it out and took it round the village in the evening. The next afternoon, the outlaws set off to collect the scrap iron. The result was at first disappointing. People were either amused or annoyed, but in neither case did they produce any scrap iron. By the time they reached Miss Milton's, they were definitely discouraged. "Let's go round to the back," suggested William. "I believe I remember seeing a lot of rubbish behind her tool shed." They went round and peeped over the hedge. Yes, there was the little heap of scrap iron that William remembered having seen. Battered saucepans, rusty tin cans, old kettles. "Crumbs," said William. "That's just what we want. And she can't want it." He glanced at the house. "We won't bother her going to ask her. We'll just take it through the hedge." He scrambled through and handed the pieces of scrap iron one by one to the others. They almost, not quite, filled William's handcart and set off again.
"I bet she'll be jolly grateful to us when she finds out," said William.
"Let's try Mrs. Beverton next. She comes to our air raid shelter, and my father says she's worse than the air raid. But I bet she'll have a bit of scrap iron. I put one of the notices through her letterbox anyway."
They trundled the cart along to Mrs. Beverton's house and up the path. And then William suddenly stopped, for the French windows of the morning room were open, and there, on a long trestle table, was what could be nothing other than a collection of scrap iron kindly left there for them by Mrs. Beverton.
"Corks!" gasped William. "Oh, that's jolly decent of her. She's just left them there ready for us so's we could get them without bothering her."
He wheeled the cart across the lawn, put it down beside the French window, and entered the morning room. The collection of scrap iron was certainly impressive. Heavy pieces of metal, jagged pieces of metal, dull pieces of metal of all textures, shapes and sizes.
"There's not room for all of it in the cart," said Ginger.
"No, but it's a jolly sight better than that stuff of old Miss Milton's," said William. "It's jolly good scrap iron, and it's jolly decent of her to put it out ready for us like this. I'd like to take it to Hadley first, before Miss Milton's. I say, we could leave Miss Milton's old stuff here and take this down to Hadley and then come back for Miss Milton's, couldn't we? Come on, let's take Miss Milton's out and put this in. This'll just fill the cart nicely, and then we can get a bit more to put with old Miss Milton's and make up the second cartful. Come on."
In a few minutes, they had emptied the cart, put its contents on the trestle table, and put the contents of the trestle table into the cart. And then, with the pleased feeling of a patriotic duty satisfactorily accomplished, they set off to Hadley. Mrs. Beverton's preparations for her Spitfire exhibition tea party were somewhat behindhand, so that she was still harassing her little maid over the arrangements for tea when the guests were due to arrive. Moreover, Bella, who was supposed to have copied out the labels for the exhibits, had forgotten all about it, and was now hastily scribbling them upstairs in her bedroom.
"Oh, Bella, do hurry up with those labels," called Mrs. Beverton from downstairs. "I thought you'd have got them done this morning."
Bella muttered something under her breath that certainly wasn't marvellous, and scrawled the remaining half-dozen labels.
"I've finished them now, Mother. Well, I wish you'd go and put them on the exhibits in the morning room, dear. I've put them in a straight line, in order, all along the table, and the labels are numbered. Just put label number one on the one nearest the door, and so on to the window. You can't go wrong. And I'm sure it's nice for you to feel you're helping, Mother."
"Marvellous," said Bella, in what she imagined to be a tone of cutting irony. She took the labels down to the morning room and looked with dispassionate contempt at the collection of metal on the table. It was the first time she'd seen it, and it was, she thought, a pretty rotten show. She straightened it and began to put the labels round. "Part of wing of Messerschmitt. Looked more like a rusty old saucepan. Piece of shell casing. Looked more like an old kettle lid, what you could see of it for rust. Part of aileron from Dornier 17. More like an old sardine tin." She flung the labels down anyhow, one by one. There were too many labels for the exhibits, but she didn't care. She wasn't interested in the rotten old exhibition. Mrs. Beverton had changed into her mauve georgette. Mrs. Monks was coming, and Miss Milton, and Mrs. Bott, and Mrs. Clavis, and Mrs. Barton, and Mrs. Brown, and Miss Blake, and Miss Featherstone. Mrs. Beverton hurried breathlessly down to the drawing room, just as the little maid was admitting Mrs. Barton.
One by one, but almost immediately afterwards, the others arrived.
"Oh, do come in," said Mrs. Beverton brightly, as she ushered them into the drawing-room. "All in a good cause, isn't it? I thought that we'd have tea first, and that while we were having it, you could go one by one and see the exhibition. There really isn't room in the morning-room for all of us. I've put a plate on the table near the door, and if you'll all put your sixpence in that, or however much more you'd like to make it, of course. All the exhibits are numbered and described. Will you go first, Miss Featherstone?"
Miss Featherstone went out, and the others sat down and began tea. In a short time, Miss Featherstone returned. She looked pale and bewildered.
"Well," said Mrs. Beverton, "did you find it interesting?"
Yes, said Miss Featherstone uncomfortably, avoiding her hostess's eye.
Yes. "Tragic, of course, I agree," said Mrs. Beverton. "Definitely tragic. Now, Miss Blake, would you like to see it? Just pop your sixpence onto the plate. Or a bit more, of course, if you really like the show. You know the way to the morning room, don't you? A little more tea, Mrs. Brown?"
One by one, the other guests went in to see the exhibition, and all returned with the same air of bewilderment, that constrained and embarrassed manner. When Mrs. Monks, the vicar's wife, returned to the drawing-room, it was quite clear that she was going to say something. She fixed her eyes on Mrs. Beverton in dramatic denunciation. "Mrs. Beverton," she said, in the voice that she generally kept for unruly choir-boys, "Mrs. Beverton, I cannot allow you to continue this gross deception." Mrs. Beverton gaped at her.
This what?" she said.
"This gross deception, this obtaining of money under false pretences for whatever purpose. Your exhibition is nothing but a collection of scrap iron of a particularly valueless description."
"How dare you," said Mrs. Beverton. "This collection was lent me by my cousin. She made £2, 6 shillings and 10 pence halfpenny by it for her local Spitfire Fund, and you have the impertinence to say..."
Miss Milton now appeared in the doorway. She, too, had been in to see the exhibition. Her small, precise figure quivered with indignation.
"This is an outrage, Mrs. Beverton," she said.
Mrs. Beverton gazed helplessly from one to the other.
"You must be aware," said Miss Milton, "that your so-called exhibition is merely a collection of scrap iron purloined, by means I do not understand, from the back of my tool shed."
"You're mad," said Mrs. Beverton. "You must be mad."
"I recognised every single piece," said Miss Milton grimly. "The old fish slice that I threw away because it was too small, and that you have the impertinence to label as part of a Dornier wing. That old saucepan that leaks, that you've labelled as a German incendiary bomb. The whole thing is beneath contempt and an insult to our intelligence."
Dazedly, Mrs. Beverton appealed to the others, but to her amazement they supported her accusers. Miss Milton and Mrs. Monks were quite right. It was just a collection of scrap iron. They didn't know how Mrs. Beverton had the face to play such a trick upon them.
"This is a conspiracy," said Mrs.
Beverton dramatically. She swept into the morning-room, followed by her bewildered guests. At the door she stopped and stared at the line of rusty, battered metal on the table.
"It's a German plot," she gasped. "It's the work of someone who wants to stop money going to the Spitfire Fund."
Her eyes roved accusingly over her guests.
"One of you must be responsible. It was a genuine exhibition before you came, wasn't it, Bella?"
"Oh, no, Mother," said Bella calmly. "It wasn't. It was just like this."
"What?"
said Mrs. Beverton, clutching her head with both hands. At this point, the little maid entered.
"It's that there William Brown, mum," she said. "He says, thank you very much for the scrap iron, and he's come back for the lot he left here."
"Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear," groaned Mrs. Brown. "I had a feeling all along that William was at the bottom of it."
"How simply marvellous,"
squeaked Bella. Mr. Brown assumed his sternest expression when Mrs. Brown laid the story before him that evening.
"The boy is getting hopelessly out of hand," he said. "Just because there's a war on, he thinks he can be allowed to go about making a nuisance of himself to everyone. He needs a lesson, and I'll see that he gets it."
"Oh, it was dreadful," moaned Mrs. Brown. "And then when Mrs. Beverton said in front of everyone that she wouldn't dream of using our air raid shelter any more, I felt..."
"Said what?" demanded Mr. Brown.
"That she wouldn't dream of using our air raid shelter any more."
"She actually said that? Asked Mr. Brown slowly.
Well, yes. In fact, she made arrangements then and there to join the Bartons. The look of severity began to fade from Mr. Brown's face.
So she won't be coming here if there's a raid tonight?
No, dear. But about William?
Oh, yes, 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 said Mr. Brown impatiently. Well, the boy obviously meant no harm. I can't see what you're making all this fuss about. Actually, when you come to think of it, he was trying to help. I can't understand why you're so hard on the child.
But, began Mrs. Brown.
You're quite sure that the Bevertons aren't coming again?
Quite sure, dear. An almost seraphic smile spread over Mr. Brown's countenance.
How marvellous, he quoted.